This is the Without Losing Your Cool podcast. We have entrepreneurs, climate changers, entertainers, and survivors turned thrivers. You do not want to miss a thing. Okay, everybody out there watching, this is going to be a really awesome, awesome episode because we have my amazing friend, Karen Moffitt, with me. Okay, not only is she an incredible human being, but she's a remarkable mom, and she is somebody who I respect. Remember years ago, we talked about starting a production company together, and we were actually working on shows together?
Yeah.
Because we're both actresses. I'm in recovery. Karen is still out there putting herself out in the world. But as women in the industry, we knew even back then that it's so important to pivot and to create your own product. So everybody, welcome the multifaceted and brilliant and wonderful Karen.
Hi.
Welcome to my podcast studio.
I'm so excited. I love your podcast. I was actually going through a bunch of them and I rewatched the one with you and the girls. And it was just like, I loved it.
Well, my God, we have been friends that long. Michaela was 2 when we met.
Yeah.
That's crazy bananas.
Typo.
I know. For those of you who don't know, my God, I have done so many things. I'm totally that person who just like jumps off the cliff. And if something interests me, I do it. It doesn't always work out well.
You do it so phenomenally.
Aww,
like you had your own cult following here. Like people would drive from all over Toronto, even like from Oakville to come and do your Taibo classes because you were so, like you always are, you're inspiring.
Aww, thank
you're
you.
You're always making people feel that they can do it, that they're going to succeed, that you know, it's in their grasp. And the fact that they're here, they're already winning. You know, like that's what you do. That's Aww. How you are with your friends, your family, your girls. Like you love big and Aww. You inspire just by being you. Honestly, Aww. You do.
Thank you. Okay, that's the end of the episode. It was a fan episode for me. Not me to fan over Karen, but for Karen to fan over me. So thanks for watching. No, but seriously, I appreciate you saying all that because, you know, during that time I was going through a lot of shit. My marriage was breaking down. Mm-hmm. I had a daughter who was struggling with her eating. Yeah. I had another who was struggling with self-harm. It was just, it's amazing how as women, mm-hmm. we just keep going, right? Like, even though we can be going through some incredibly dark moments, personally, we still get up and put our best foot forward. And that's something that you also do because, you know, it hasn't been easy for you either, mm-hmm. you know, with your career, you know, in your relationship with your family, you've had so many things thrown at you.
Yeah.
You know, so I think that that's a beautiful thing about you too, is like that ability to shine no matter what, you know, and you've always inspired me in the way that you don't back down. And because I threw in the towel, like when we were working on production stuff and we were like, oh, let's get some shows up off the ground. I was like, you know what? I'm just going to go over here and do this other thing. And you kept going. And now we're where we are with you, with your production company and with your work. And I love it.
Thank you. Thanks
I love
for
it.
Saying that. Thank you. But I also believe that you have to throw 1,000 rods out there, like fishing rods, and see what sticks. Because when it's meant to happen, I truly, truly believe it's going to happen.
So, okay, I agree. I believe that too.
Yeah.
Okay, I totally believe that. But the question I have is when it's not happening and you've got 1,000 rods and you're not even getting one bite, mm-hmm. how the fuck do you keep going? Like, how do you keep going as a woman? Mm-hmm. First off, as an actress, mm-hmm. right? Because, and you and I had dinner last week, and we talked about that, the expiration date that women suffer from, that men don't suffer from.
Yeah.
So this is going to be a multifaceted question. But so, how do you keep the rod in the water as an actress? Let's talk about the actress piece first.
Well, okay. I will say now that I produce as well as act, it's completely shifted. Mm-hmm. My ability to do auditions, to do work in the acting field. Because when I was younger, you know, it's the actor, me, and oh my God, I've got to, you know, why didn't I get it? I would have been perfect. Now that I'm on the other side and I see all the variables involved in casting, it's honestly like probably one of the last bits when you're trying to produce something that it's like, yeah, you know, you look like the lead too much. Yeah. You're too familiar. We want to keep it diverse. Yeah. We want to be more inclusive. So the casting is typically never about your talent. The fact that you're in the room, mm-hmm. you're talented. That's why you're in the room. You're auditioning because you already have beat a lot of other people.
Right. As a performer, if you are somebody who's in the mm-hmm. industry and you're watching this right now, like that, it sounds crazy. And this was something I could never wrap my head around because I was young. I was insecure. I was dealing with all my shit. So I wasn't able to make that separation. And like you're just saying now, the first time it actually became a thing that I understood was when I had written a pilot called Cattle Call with my other girlfriend, Laura Damo. Yes. And we got greenlit to go to pilot stage with City TV. And we were in the casting room because we were producers and it was our show.
Yeah.
And literally I had my aha moment as an actor of like, holy shit. When the person who is the character comes into the room, it's undeniable.
Yeah. 100%.
So that gave me a little bit of peace. I still retired from acting because I'm still too sensitive. But that being said, so, I mean, it's amazing that you have that ability and you have that knowledge because I think a lot of performers, creative people suffer still feeling,
yeah,
it's a me thing.
And I get that because until you're actually on the other side, you don't, because people would say it and I'd be like, yeah, you're just trying to be nice. You know, like I would brush it off instead of like really taking to heart that, oh, maybe they are right. And the fact that casting directors still want to bring me in and they keep bringing me in, even if I didn't book last four auditions I did for them,
right.
Obviously I'm doing something right that I'm still being brought into the room.
Right.
So, and I love when you do get the job, it's so much fun. It's such a joy and it's work, but it's joyful work. And I have a daughter who is watching me and she motivates me a lot.
And so what about having Bella is the motivation? Like, what do you feel is the motivating piece of that?
That's a great question. Cause it's like, I feel like there's so many reasons, but right. I know she's watching me and I know, or I believe that children really learn most by watching us. They watch what you do. They watch how you behave. It's not so much all the time what you say. Mm-hmm. They watch what you do and how you get up and pursue what you love. I want to model that for her.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, life is not fair. It's not always easy. And you can't control when stuff happens to you. The only thing you can control is how you're going to be in it. And I try and remember that for myself as much as for her. And I try and live in gratitude. Like maybe I didn't get that job because there's something better coming down the pipe.
Right.
Like I really do try and live in a space of gratitude because it really works for me. It does. It just,
yeah. I agree. I feel like for me, the times that I slip the most and like go furthest down the rabbit hole of, I wouldn't say it's necessarily that I'm not being grateful, but just like the poor me's, like I can get into the poor me and why me and you know, get into those.
Why isn't it working? Why? Right. When you're pouring so much into it, right?
Yeah. 100%.
Yeah.
So I feel like those are the times that I have to dig deep and go into the mindset of gratitude and find something. Like, yes, fucking find something. Even 100%. If it doesn't directly relate back to that exact moment of struggle. Mm-hmm. So go past reach. You know, like sometimes, you know, when I'm in a dark place or when I feel, when I'm really struggling, for me, literally sometimes the three things and it's corny, but like, oh, I have a roof over my head. I have food in my fridge and I have people around me who love me. And
But that makes you one of the richest people in the world,
right?
Your health, people that love you, mm-hmm. and you know, food in your belly,
I know.
A roof over your head. Like those are like the pillars of.
I know.
So rich life. Sorry.
No, it's true. Like, no, it's totally true. But I think that, you know, being ambitious women like we are, mm-hmm. there's also, you know, there's a lot of, for me, there's a lot of weight that I put on, you know, what society or what within myself I deem as being successful.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Yeah. So now, okay.
Well, so we're constantly being told who we should be, what we should be. We're constantly judged how we're dressed. If we're too old, we're too fat, we're too skinny, we're too tall, we're too short. Like, it's exhausting.
I know.
It is freaking exhausting.
It is exhausting. And
so how could you not be having somewhat of an embodiment of that inner critic, like from all of the constant messaging we receive as women?
Yeah. It is constant. So because we're both mothers of daughters, how do you shield or help Bella navigate through that? Because I feel like Bella is like full her whole life. There's been no reprieve from like social media. Whereas my girls are sort of first generation social media. Like they started on MSN chat. You know what I mean? Right? That's going back.
MySpace.
Yeah, MySpace, all this stuff. And now, like, kids like Bella, who's just turned 17, it's like, they're
whole, oh my God.
I know. Isn't that crazy?
That happened. Okay.
I know. Ooh.
Yeah. Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
So what sort of...
I feel bad for them. I really, really do. Like, I am so grateful that I didn't grow up with a camera following my every move, because I made a lot of mistakes.
Right.
Right. So it's interesting. We try and dialogue. When she was younger, I really tried to keep her screen time as low as possible. Mm-hmm. Sports definitely helped.
Right.
Like, I'm so grateful that she's athletic and likes to engage in sport activities. And plus, as an only child, I wanted to make sure that she had group dynamics to learn.
Yeah.
You got to learn how to work with people. Yeah. Like you get that when you have siblings.
Right.
And when
the art of negotiating, the art of compromise.
Exactly. And so I was really determined to make sure she did group sports to build that. And the great thing is it guaranteed her not on her phone, because she would absolutely be playing or practicing or what have you. I didn't let her sleep with it in her room.
I agree. In my parenting books, Raising Your Kids Without Losing Your Cool and Parenting Your Teen Without Losing Your Cool, I say to the parents who are reading it, for me, I didn't have that, but it started to come into our reality and certainly it infiltrated more into Michaela's life being youngest.
Yeah, absolutely.
But right from the get-go, you know, not even knowing the beast that it would become, Yannick and I were aligned with the like, hell no, not in the bedroom.
Yeah.
You know, and it got to the point so ridiculous. So, and I used to drill it into their heads. If you're going to have it in your room, for God's sake, have it on airplane mode, the EMFs and all the
radio. Yeah, exactly. Right.
So I was like, so it came, we got bit in the ass for that when Michaela was in Paris. While she was in university, she was in Paris with a group of friends in her second year of university. So it was 2015. And it was the attacks. I don't know if you remember the ISIS attacks.
Oh my God.
All over Paris. And the hotel, all I knew, and this is a lesson for parents listening to, is what we take for granted because we have constant access to our children, either through family group chats or whatever. You feel like you're always connected.
Yeah.
So we were so cavalier with her being the baby and having what we thought was this direct line to her.
Yeah.
So she was away in Switzerland for her second year, her second year in university, and they were traveling every weekend. So we knew she was going to Paris, but all we knew is that she was staying at a Best Western.
Oh my God.
We didn't have an address.
Right.
We knew nothing.
Right.
But we took for granted we would always be able to reach her through her phone.
That false sense of security, right?
Total false sense of security.
Yeah.
Parents, if you have kids that are out there in the world traveling, get fucking addresses, know where they are, have a direct line to them that's not their cell phone, because the attacks happened.
The phones were
6 hours ahead. Yannick was filming. I was at home and my phone started blowing up. I know Michaela's in Paris. Is she okay? Is she okay? Well, we trained her so well to have her phone on airplane that we were calling her and it was going straight to voicemail. So of course,
yeah,
for I think it was almost 2 hours, we couldn't get a hold of her. They actually let Yannick leave set and come home because he was so distracted, as you can imagine. So we're at our home pacing. He's calling every Best Western. Thank God he's French. He's calling literally every Best Western that we could find. And he's inquiring. And another thing is her name wasn't on the reservation. So even if we found the right hotel, we couldn't have known it. Long story short is that, you know, we take for granted in this modern technology and these phones that we're always going to be able to reach our children or we're always going to know where they are or what they're doing. But that's not the case. You need to pay attention and you need to be aware of what they're doing and what they're going through. And I love that you did that with Bella. And she walks like she's a child who hasn't been addicted to her phone.
Yeah, she does. And I'm grateful because it's so hard. Like the expectation, the alteration of self and there's even more pressure now.
I know.
As being a woman, a female, it's just, it can be really, really cruel. Like you don't get to turn it off. Like I got bullied in school and I remember that the safe haven was coming home.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
And then everything was just stopped.
Yeah.
They don't get that now. It's like, it can still infiltrate your home. And it's not easy. I don't envy that at all. And
So what technology. Do you think? Yeah. Technology is crazy. If it's, I love your husband. He always says, and we say this in our family for a long time because we have been friends now for almost a quarter of a century.
Yeah.
We say this all the time in our family because your husband says it. Wouldn't it be great if people use their powers for good instead of evil?
Absolutely.
He always says that. Yeah. He said that. That was one of the first things he ever said to us. And you know, that is stuck with, because even if, you know, the reality is if we all kind of walked with that thinking, if I just used my energy to do good rather than cause harm or like you're saying about being bullied, like what do you, so many people, or I was bullied also, but what do you feel being bullied taught you? If there was anything to say that good that came out of being bullied, right?
That's interesting because it was damaging.
Right.
Right. But in the same token, it taught me that I had to fight for myself. It really made me not want to be mean. Like that's definitely, I think one of the biggest things is I truly believe no matter how wonderful a person's life looks, and you and I have discussed this, right? Like it doesn't matter. Everybody is going through shit.
Mm-hmm.
Some are better at hiding it.
Yeah.
Some are numb to it, but I truly believe everybody is going through shit. And
walking
why not
wounds,
why
right?
not be compassionate? Like it's I find it so much easier just to be kind because that's all I wanted was people to be kind. So I try and model what I would have wanted people to be at the worst times. You know, because it's just, and now as I'm of course older and wiser and have done a ton of therapy.
For various reasons.
Amen.
All the reasons.
You know, you understand that like a lot of that bullying, that inner critic of the bully is probably way worse in their head. So I know that it's probably even shitty in their own head.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
And
well, 100%.
They're lashing out, but that critic is criticizing them inside constantly. So I have a lot of
empathy.
Yeah. Yeah, that's another thing it taught me is empathy.
Yeah. I agree. And I think also too, when you've been bullied and you've overcome, I think it also helps you to raise empathetic humans, right?
Very true.
Right? Because you're so much more aware that there are people out there in the world. And again, in my books, I talk about it a lot. It's just like, it is your responsibility. Like nobody else is going to teach your child to not be a bully.
Yeah.
Like you have to have these conversations. And I would have those conversations with my girl. I had one that leaned a little bit more to bullying than the other two. but she's a beautiful, wonderful adult now, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But again, like, where did that come from? Like, did that come from her, like, for me, I know when I went through a time of bullying was because there was a girl that was going to beat me up. And the only way I could keep myself from having her beat me up and bully me was to join her.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it was like survival of the fittest. So I think there are a lot of reasons why people continue on. But what I dislike to see happen, and I think we see this in the industry, unfortunately, a lot, is bullies who have not recovered from bullying.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Do you come across in your work as a producer, as an actress, have you ever felt bullied on set or in the industry?
I have been really fortunate. That has not.
I think it's because we're Canadian.
I think so. And I just think I've been really fortunate to work on crews and with people, American, internationally, that they're so at the top of their game. They have nothing to prove. So they're just good people.
Right.
Right. But I know people that have had much different experiences.
Because the Me Too movement, right? What, 5 years ago now?
Yeah.
It was huge. It like,
we started Light the Girl Productions and then that
no way
came to fruition. Like, it was just like, oh boy, here we go. So yeah, Yes. I did have a call once from my agent where it was like such and such who will not be named.
Right.
Very, very prominent producer who is notorious for wanting to date actresses. Dates. Called and was hoping to set up a dinner with me. And fortunately, I'm married at the time. And I was just like,
no.
Whether that altered the trajectory, I will never know.
I know.
It's unfortunate. It is really bad in our industry. I think it hasn't gone away. I just think people have gotten more
covert.
Yeah. I think.
Yeah. Cause I wonder, I mean, it's interesting cause you read articles, you know, because like I said, even though I'm not actively in the industry and I won't likely go back, you know, my husband is, and also I'm the mother of daughters, you know, so I'm always interested in hearing like what's kind of being revealed. And, you know, I think that there will always be predators.
Oh my God.
You know,
100%.
And I don't think they necessarily all like, I think that, you know, it's not just in the film industry where we have predators hiding in plain sight, you know, I've heard about it in female sports. I mean, God, look at the US gymnastics.
Hello.
Right? Yeah. I mean,
totally.
So as a mother,
nobody's safe. Like that's a crazy thing. Go anywhere, but I think that's always been the case. It's just now we have social media that is exposing, like we live in such a global way now that what could have been happening, but covered up and hushed up, now gets shown to the world. And you know, like, I think it's easier to expose per se. And then once one person talks about it, it's amazing how many others come out of the woodwork because they think, oh, it was only me. And like, who knows where their mind goes, but typically, you know, it's like, oh, what did I do? Just as women, we do that.
Yeah, we do. We wear it and we take the ownership, you know, we take it off the person it should be on and we put it on ourselves and we wear it on ourselves. And I know for sure I did that my whole life. And interestingly enough, I've had a couple conversations this season about, you know, my own abuse and how I didn't even know that I had trauma. Like I had no idea that it was trauma because I didn't know it wasn't normal. You know, and I think that this is what happens as women is that we don't talk about certain things because we just think that maybe it's normal and everybody's going through it. So I think for me, being the mother of girls, it's always been sort of at my forefront to teach them to speak up, to always be ready to stand in their power. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It makes raising them challenging at times. Because you're like, oh, I want them to have a voice. Well, I don't want you to have that voice telling me no.
Well, you and I just talked about that at dinner about your daughter and her dad. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. It's just like, oh, right. This is what I wanted, that she can stand up and say, no, I disagree with that, or no, that's not okay. And
yeah,
yeah, like it's it's like, yay, sometimes, but most days it's like, yes, you know?
So when you were growing up, because I know your parents are in their 80s,
yeah,
right?
My mom turns 80 this year. My dad is, he's turning 87.
That's crazy.
It's amazing.
Yeah. They still live alone. They drive themselves
around. Very independent. I am so blessed.
It's true.
I'm so lucky.
Even when they show up at the
door. They show up all the time. I'm like, oh, hello, you know.
And what a blessing.
Yeah.
So when you were going through your difficult times as a young girl and being bullied and stuff like that, with that generational gap, did you have a place to land at home?
No. So I was that latchkey kid. Mm. So my parents came to Canada. My dad came from Edinburgh, Scotland, and my mom came from Sweden, and they met at some like Estonian dance. It's just so Canadian. But they were working, and they were working hard because their value was they came to Canada to build a better life and to provide, and they worked really, really hard to do that. And at one point, we were living, I guess, in Scarborough, and my dad was not pleased with the scene. There was a lot of problems for my brother with underage drinking and drugs and a lot of girls getting pregnant. And so my dad's like, I bought us a place up in Mount Albert. And it's like, where? What? Like, I thought it was a joke. We're driving in the car. And it's like, at the time, the highway, I think, only went up to Highway 7.
Oh, my God.
And I'm just like, is this a joke? What's going on? And I was just in grade 6. And so, yeah, we moved up to Mount Albert, but my parents worked downtown. My dad at Hydro and my mom at Air Canada. So they were gone by 6:30 in the morning. And my brother was 6 years older than me. So he got to go with them to finish high school.
Oh, I was going to ask, how did that turn out for him?
Yeah.
So the problem was him drinking and pregnant girls, and yet he's the one that still got to live in.
Well, he wasn't impregnated.
I know he wasn't. Andrew was not impregnated. No, but for the record,
in the neighborhood on our street were getting knocked up, and my parents were like, oh, no, 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 no.
Wow.
So
we still got to go hang out with all of them.
You know, right?
So you're like, hey, wait a minute. I'm in Mount Albert.
Yeah, but that also meant that 6:30 in the morning.
You were alone.
I was alone till they got home at 7 at night.
How'd that feel?
I had a lot of issues around loneliness. I was very, very lonely. And then I would circumvent myself into people's families. Aww. I would go home with my friends and I would hang out at their house and then
so you wouldn't be
go
alone.
Home so I wouldn't have to be alone. Yeah. Because it was weird. We were always all together.
Yeah.
And then when we moved up there, they were having to commute. And so, but it also made me creative.
I was going to ask.
Right?
Is that when you found?
I didn't have
internet.
Cable up in Mount Albert at the time.
Oh my God.
They hadn't even laid cable up there. So you had like three channels.
CBC.
Exactly. That was one of them. Yep. And so music and dancing and that was definitely like you learn to entertain yourself.
Without losing your cool, we've got your gift-giving needs covered. Whether it's a holiday gift, if it's a support gift, if it's a little extra love that somebody in your life needs gift, or a parent who needs a little more guidance, advice, and the knowing that they are not alone out there in their parenting journey, we have got you covered. If you know somebody who is deepening their relationship to self, grab them the Self-Love Bundle. It includes the Loving Yourself Without Losing Your Cool book, Loving Yourself journal that accompanies the book, and love notes for adults. If you have somebody in your life who's expecting or has a little from 0 to 10, then the Raising Kids Bundle is the perfect gift set for them. It comes with the Raising Your Kids Without Losing Your Cool and Love Notes for Littles. If you have a parent in your inner circle who is heading into tween and teendom, boy, have we got the gift set for you. Parenting Your Teens Without Losing Your Cool comes with love notes for tweens or teens. You get to choose. All of this is available for you at ChantelBisson.com. If you're shopping ChantelBisson.com for the very first time, don't forget to add yourself to the newsletter to claim your shopping discount code. Go now.
And again, not to like tell you to go buy my books, but, but you know, that's something I talk about a lot also with parenting is like a lot of parents feel guilt over not stimulating their children 100% of the time. So much of their character develops from that self-preservation space of like, how do I entertain myself? How do I occupy myself? How do I deal with loneliness? How it teaches them life-saving skills because you were lonely. Well, you could have been lonely or you could have been like, fuck, I'm going to just join some other families.
Yeah.
So you created your own solution.
Yeah. There's a resiliency in figuring out what you need to do for you.
Yeah.
You know, and
which are tools and that nobody can ever take away from you.
Like I can remember being a kid and being like, mom, I'm bored.
For sure.
And then she'd be like, well, you could clean the house. And I'm like, I'm not that bored.
Right. Well, back in the day, my mom worked at Brewers Retail and there was a switchboard operator. Uh-huh. So I would call and I'd be like, hi, can I please speak to Connie Craig? And I would try to put my biggest, big grown-up voice on. And then she would go, hi, Chantel. She's on the other line right now. Still, I'll have her call you back. You know, back in the day when there were no cell phones.
Oh, I know.
Right?
And no interruption of calls. No. You talk on the phone forever with your girlfriend. Yeah. And then my parents beep, would call beep, through. Beep. We're so mad at you. We've been trying to reach you for an hour. Like,
well, I'm alone in Mount Albert, so I'm on the phone.
I'm on the phone, okay? I can't go anywhere. I don't have a car and I can't drive.
Yeah. I'm little. So when did you get the acting bug? When did you decide that you knew that you were an artist who wanted to perform?
In all honesty, I was really young because I can remember acting out my Walt Disney album like seriously at the age of 4.
Were those good days?
Yeah.
In your bedroom.
Put the record on and I just sing all the songs, act them all out. And I definitely loved expressing. It was expression. I think that's what it was for me. It wasn't necessarily look at me. It was more for me at the time. It was just like being the youngest and at least for me, I was more the observer. I was constantly observing because everybody else was telling me, okay, you're going here. You have to do this. And da, 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 da. And it wasn't, I had no voice.
Wow. Yeah.
Right. I was just, this is what you're doing because this is what we have to get done. And you're the youngest. So you're
come along
the last. And it was just a form of expression that filled me with so much joy.
And then what was the shift to get into producing? Like what motivated you to be like, I'm going to make projects. I'm going to make a production company. I'm going to make my own projects.
Well, okay. So let's rewind 8 years ago. I was getting older. And as women in our industry of acting, it wasn't respected or the rules just got really, really small and limited. Right. And so you were either like the other woman or the matronly mother or like they were just, they were so one dimension. Mm-hmm. They weren't like real
robust
people.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
And I have an incredible group of friends and they weren't being represented either. And it was kind of like, this is so not right. Like I just, my experiences with my life and my friends, it's just like, there's so much richness in it. And I'm like, we got to get that out there. Mm-hmm. Like, I want to see that. Mm-hmm. I want Bella to see that.
Women represented through all ages. It's
all
pretty,
ages, all backgrounds, all sizes, all like, you know, you go to France, there's stunning older women. And I mean, older, they age.
Yeah, they allow them
to
age.
They really, they do not. And I'm do whatever you need to do.
Yeah.
But it was refreshing even for myself to see an older woman that was just aged because it's not reflected on TV or in film very much.
No, it's so fascinating. Again, something you and I talked about the other night over dinner was that, you know, it's so fascinating to me that men are allowed to age and they're called distinguished and women age and they're just old. It's like the ageism is so gross. I mean, and I don't care who knows, like, you know, back in the day I was doing Botox and fillers and all, and I hated the way it changed my face. So I stopped. And then at 49, when I recognized that I was really starting to look like my dad, like really, like I had no neckline, I had no jawline and my eyes, I could pull the skin over. I treated myself to a ponytail lift and, you know, took all those things away that I didn't want to live with for the rest of my life.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? So to your point of like, it's up to everybody to do what helps 100%. Them feel best and age. But after I did that, I stopped doing fillers and stuff. Cause I was like, okay, well, this is a new face, you know, this is 4 years old and I want to, when I'm 70, I want it to look like it's had life. You know, I want the experiences, the learning, the struggle, the joy, I want it all to be represented. And it's so readily allowed to be represented for men. So I love that you're doing that for women and you know, for performers everywhere, for yourself.
Yeah. And like, you know, don't, like, I constantly am like, will I ever do it? Should I do it? Because as I age and I see myself on camera, it's difficult.
It is difficult.
At times,
for sure.
It's 100%. Like, oh, I'm aging. Right. Yeah. You know, because that's the gift of like kind of your eyes going, you think you look really good all the time.
Except I need to get my glasses on to put my fucking eyeshadow on now. And I'm like, how do I put eyeshadow on around these? But, you know, I had a really beautiful conversation with Cynthia Dale.
Yes.
I had her on this season. Woman. Oh my God. Mm-hmm. And you know, we know Cynthia Dale because we grew up knowing her and her sister.
Yes.
And it was stunning for me to hear her talk about, she had just wrapped a project with Will McCormick and it was a 3-week run. And for Cynthia Dale to sit on the other side of the camera to me and say, well, you know, so as far as I know, that's my last project ever.
It's insane.
Right?
Because there's so much talent.
And
experience and light wisdom. And like, that's the thing. Like,
I know.
But I mean,
and it's interesting because Yannick is 17 years on Murdoch now. So he started when when he was 37. And, you know, he made a crack to his producer the other day, the executive producer said, he was, wow, I'm in my third decade of my life being this character.
Yeah.
And the fascinating thing is for him, if he does it for another 15 years, he would be, oh my God, he'd be 69.
Crazy.
Crazy.
I'm not far behind.
No, we're not that far behind. I'm 3 weeks younger, so I would be maybe 68. But he'd be 69 and there'd be a series ready for him right out the gate. Yeah. Whereas, you know, with me, I remember as a performer, and it was something that I took really hard, was that, you know, once I was a mother, I had my third at 26, 27,
baby.
Yeah, baby, 20, I guess 27, because Mikhail is 26 right now. I was like, they didn't know what to do with me because I was still young and cute because I was just 27, but they're like, but you're a mom. Whereas Yannick was a father, but not, he wasn't looked at in under the same microscope.
No. And I'd like to think that's changing.
I hope so. And like, it's because of women like you starting your own production companies and telling, you know.
I definitely like to contribute to the positive storytelling for sure. And I even find now, you know, the roles, there's much more older women, not
enough
three-dimensional
but there's
definitely more roles being presented and shown a lot in those romantic MOWs.
Mm-hmm.
I find the young girl always has some boss or some woman that's, you know, a foil for her. But yeah, I think it's important that we see all lifestyles because I think there's just so much to be gained from different cultures, different upbringings, different lifestyles. I see beauty in that.
Mm-hmm.
And we celebrate that in our home. And I know you guys do as well. And it adds richness.
I agree. So what do you look for in a project? Like when you go to buy a book, the rights to a book or a story, what do you have, like, things that you are specifically looking for?
I do. I for example, the book that I optioned right now, Everything Beautiful Is Not Ruined, is a very beautiful, hilarious and heartbreaking story of a mother and a daughter, because that's a story I want to see. I see a lot of fathers and sons, but I don't see that many mothers and daughters. And it also deals with mental health, something else I think is important. And I look for projects that you haven't seen before. I want to see stuff that I haven't seen before, stories about women in situations like we've explored men and their paths and the balance of career and life. But I don't even think we've scratched the surface of what that can look like for women, because there's such a spectrum of what that looks like.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's great storytelling to be seen in that. I think there's amazing, amazing stories to be shared.
I agree.
And that inspire, that educate, that bring us together. Like you learn
right
from other cultures. Like when you see and then you understand universally that we're all the same.
Well,
we might have trappings that are different.
Right.
But for the most part, people love their children. People love who they love. And that's universal.
Yeah.
What happens around it can be a little different. Mm-hmm. And it can be very interesting and it can inspire you to try other. Like, you know, maybe I'll try, you know, volunteering or something. Like, I don't know what it looks like, but it just like it opens your mind to possibilities. And I don't know, life is kind of juicy with possibilities.
Well, and I think I totally agree. Life is juicy when you're open-minded. And then that's where possibility lives on the other side of just like being open to seeing, learning, understanding, growing, teaching, you know, any way that we want to participate. And, you know, really for me, when I started this podcast, I was like, well, okay, well, what do I want the podcast to be about? And really I want it to be about how can I help you get up off your couch today? You know what I mean?
Like, yes, absolutely. But that's who you are. Like I said, at the top of it, inspiring.
Yeah.
You remind us that there's stuff that we could do, like, cause we get trapped. Sorry.
No, don't be sorry at all.
Okay. So I'm happy to say I'm 50. I'm in my 50s.
Woohoo.
Woohoo. And it's funny because we've had this conversation. Old ways of being don't always necessarily fit with this new
world
existence.
Yeah.
And I'm fascinated to know more about it. And I'm like, in some ways, there's so much gold in the sense of self, the clarity of certain things. And then the world kind of doesn't reflect us.
Yeah. Yeah. And we talked about that. And I think that that's so important, you know, to anybody who's watching and listening right now is like, sure. Yeah. This is my girlfriend. She's an actor. She's a producer. But ultimately we're at the same place in life where we're in our 50s. And it's like,
yeah,
you know, when we talked about it too, is like, what, like when you're young, 50 seems so far away.
Oh my God. Totally.
Right. It seems so far away. And even when, you know, even when I was in my 20s, I knew people in their 50s and I was kind of like, oh wow. There was sort of, what's the word I'm looking for? Like a result, like they had just resigned themselves to I'm old now.
Yeah.
I'm going into being old. And I feel like because we're in our 50s now, it's like, fuck that. I'm not old until I'm 80, 90.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like for me, old now seems so far away.
Yeah.
Whereas before 50 seemed so far away. But now that I'm in my 50s, I'm like, okay, well, how can I be in my 50s and still live a juicy life?
Yes.
Right?
Exactly. Exactly. But I'll also say too, like my mom's 50 is very different than our 50.
Yes.
I think that lifestyles and such have changed. So I feel like 50 is still a very juicy age.
Yeah.
You know, but it's not necessarily portrayed.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not. Yeah. It's still not represented. Mm-hmm. It's still represented that men in their 50s are dating 20-year-olds on screen. Do you know what I mean?
A lot. Yeah. They still cast that way in many.
I know.
You know.
I know. And Yannick and I have this conversation all the time because, you know, going back to my insecurities, you know.
Which we all have.
But, you know, in your 50s, you start to have, you know, I for like the last decade, because I'm 54. So the last decade, let's call it, every time I would see the doctor, it's like, so is there a change in your libido? Do you have pain with sex now? Is there vaginal dryness? You know, you start getting these questions.
Yeah.
Right? And it's like, nope, still good. Good libido, still good orgasm, still good. Yeah. The vag is all juicy. Everything's working.
Yeah.
Everything's working. And then all of a sudden, literally wake up one day and you're like, oh, there's that pain with sex they were talking about. Oh, there's that vaginal dryness they were asking me about that I, for 10 years, have been able to say, nope. And I got to tell you, that fucks with your mind.
Oh my God, totally.
Because here's my husband, arguably at the top of his career at 54, 17 seasons in, looking hunkier than ever with just a little bit of silver right here and right there.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? And his reach is growing. And then, you know, I'm looking in the mirror and I'm like, why am I looking like an apple on sticks? You know what I mean? Why is my waistline disappearing? Yeah. Why is my vagina drying up? Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And why am I gaining weight when nothing has changed? Eating less or, you know. Yeah.
Drinking less alcohol, yeah. Doing all the things they tell you to do. And it's a very real obstacle.
Yeah.
That you're all of a sudden confronted.
And 50% of the society goes through it. And yet
nobody's talking about it.
It's not really being talked about. And it's fascinating to me. And I'm grateful too for the fact that I have friends that are older. Mm-hmm. I have friends that are younger. And I learned from both. And thank God for my older friends because, you know, they've shared some of their wisdom about, you know, when you start finding you can't sleep through the night, you know, you know, menopause is when your period is actually stopped for over a year.
Yeah. Perimenopause is all the torment leading up to that point in time.
Yeah.
And that's when you might need bio. And see, that was the other thing too, is that I went on bioidentical hormones because I was working with a hormone specialist.
Yeah.
And so all of that was fine. But then I was like, I don't feel like myself. Like, yeah. I don't know. Like I'm struggling with anxiety or depression. And I'm like, are my hormones not balanced? Yeah. Right. So then I'm like, okay, I'm going off because of everything, because I need to have a realistic sense of what my baseline is.
Yeah.
So I went off and that's when the pain with sex started. That's when the vaginal dryness. So I'm, you know, but now at least I know where I'm sitting hormonally and I can go forward and, you know, have a plan and move through menopausal years with joy. I mean, you're never going to hear me complain that I don't have to pack a tampon ever again in my life, right? Or that I can have sex without fear of getting pregnant. You're never going to hear me complain about those things. But it's like, it's so crazy that you don't get one without the other, right? Like you've got to
go through. We're pretty much the same age.
Yeah.
And those aren't my experiences.
Yeah.
And that's what's so wild.
I know.
Everybody has their own, like I have girlfriends who started perimenopause, their late 30s.
Wow. That is young. I thought in my mid 40s. Young.
Yeah. And I'm just like, oh.
But you also have friends, like I had friends, they're like, just you wait when you wake up and you like got a river of blood between your legs for weeks. And I'm like, I didn't have that. Maybe was it that I was on bioidentical hormones that whole time? I don't know. But you know what? I got to say, I just finished reading In Pieces, Sally Field's memoir.
Ooh, how was that?
It was kind of interesting. There were parts of it where I was like, ooh, I don't think I really like her very much. And then there were parts where I was like, I totally get how damaged she was because she was a victim of sexual abuse. And I didn't know that.
I didn't know that at all.
To the point of Cynthia Dale saying, as a woman in her 60s, where she was like, that's, as far as I know, that's my last job. Sally Field, of all people, struggled with not knowing. And she's, who doesn't know Sally Field?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I find it interesting that even Sally Field had to advocate for herself as a woman in her late 50s and her 60s to still be recognized as somebody of value. Right. And it's just wild because, you know, Liam Neeson doesn't have to prove that he has value.
No.
So I just really hope that in our time here on Earth, in the way that the women have gone before us, who have given us the beautiful gift of being able to be in our 50s and to be like 50s, the new 40, you know, or 50s, the new 30, whatever they say it is. But, you know, so what kind of trailblazing are we going to leave behind for the girls and women coming up behind us? So I love that you know, you're doing that through your storytelling and through, you know,
Thank you.
Being somebody who's willing to like, you know, slay the dragon in this industry.
It's just, there's too many great stories and there's just, I want to see us represented.
Yeah.
You know, like all versions of us. It's important. And it's important for my daughter to see that.
Yeah.
And I think it's important for men and boys to see that. Like, I love looking on sites now at clothes and they'll have variety of models. This model is size whatever, this model is, you know, this size, and it's nice. It's like, the clothes do look different and it's nice to see what that looks like. And to reflect that not all women were that old version of tiny
mannequin size. Real women eating real food with real bodies.
Yeah.
So with your creativity and being the youngest, Did you have support with your family? I mean, because obviously they're immigrants to Canada, like my mom.
Yeah. Both my parents were really supportive of my arts journey. So I think I did my first play. It was Oliver and I was one of the pickpocketers. And it was it. Like, I loved it. I was hooked. I was it. So grade four, that's sealed the deal for me. And my parents had to deal with, like, I want to do dance classes and I want to do vocal classes. And, you know, and they were really amazing at supporting that. Mm-hmm. And so I got to perform through grade school and high school. And then I wanted to, like, go to New York. And my parents were like, all right. We love you and we believe in you, kind of. How about you get a degree and then you go back to your acting? And I was like, fine. So I did an English drama degree. So, and I graduated, but I get it now too, as an adult.
Yeah. And as a parent,
I was the first of my family to graduate from university.
Your brother didn't graduate?
No.
No way. No,
he decided to work after graduating from high school.
So he's seven. He
would have.
He would have been.
Yeah. So Andrew, he would be 6 years older. He would be turning 60 January 1 next year.
Oh.
So,
Sorry.
Yeah.
He won't get to do that.
No. No. And that's what I mean. Like, everything can look great, but we all have losses and traumas, and I think that motivates me a lot too, is having to watch a sibling die very quickly from cancer. It really motivates you, and it was hard. It was really, really hard. It was really, really hard. And it was only him and I, and it was like, we're gonna take care of our parents. We're going to, like, you know, it was always him and I against the world kind of thing. He was the one that actually, we always joked, because my parents were from Europe,
right,
that we were the one horde Vikings, because my mom being Swedish and my dad being Scottish, it was like, we only got one horn. So,
but together you made two. Yeah,
exactly.
Together you had two horns.
We were always, and he didn't have an easy road, you know, like he took the brunt of things, and it's just weird. Like,
well, being the firstborn and being a son of immigrant parents, there would have been a huge expectation load on him, right? A lot of
expectation and undiagnosed learning disabilities at the time. So like there was just a combination of things that really made his path very, very, very difficult. And yet he still had like a heart of gold. Like he went through hell. Addictions and stuff, and he was always the nicest, most gentle person in the room. Mm-hmm. always. And
do you think that's from overcoming so much?
I think so.
That he had a level of
compassion and empathy and
patience,
curiosity. He was so curious,
really,
because like he'd meet people, he'd honestly just be like, oh. And then he had this like really subtle, like he was just so accepting, because I guess maybe that's what he was longing for. Perhaps. I don't know. I'm speculating, but he was it didn't make sense to me. Like that was a struggle with faith.
What didn't make sense to you, that his tough journey or that he died so young?
He died so young. Like he was on a great path. Like everything
he'd overcome
so finally much. In such a great way. And he was looking to retiring and he knew where he was going to go live and he was going to drum. And he was incredibly creative and amazing visual artist and musician as well. And then
cancer.
Esophageal cancer. That was fourth stage terminal. And
wow,
it was like so fast. And it was just, it was awful. It was awful and awful for my parents. Like, it was, I wouldn't wish it on anyone.
Well, yeah, you and I have
sadly, it happens to a lot of people.
Parents shouldn't have to bury their children, that's for sure. We have definitely talked about that.
Mm-hmm.
So Andrew would be 60.
Yeah. January 1st next year, yeah.
Because you were only had each other growing up.
Yeah.
Do you feel like you were able to say everything you ever wanted to say to your brother before he passed?
I've wondered that myself. Like it's, I'd like to think I did, but you know, I was blessed. I was blessed that I could spend the last times with my brother. Mm-hmm. Like I got to go out to Vancouver, which is where he lived. And I got to be with him for like his last month. Mm-hmm. But it messes you up. Mm-hmm. It's very hard to
be with somebody as they're passing.
Yeah. Watching their life slipping away. And he fought hard. He fought hard to like the 24th hour. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'd like to think I did. I'd like to think he knew how much I loved him. And I, even if I didn't say it all, I know that the fact that I was able to be there, mm-hmm. I know he knew he wasn't alone and that he was loved. Yeah. And my parents got out there too. So,
that's
good. And his son. Mm-hmm. That's a blessing too, because I get to see him and his son.
Yeah.
So it makes it a little less finite.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I see sparks of him mm-hmm. in his son, which is really nice.
Yeah. Mm.
But loss is horrible.
Yeah.
You know, like when you love something to lose it, it's important. It's part of life. And hopefully it makes you more loving.
Yeah.
And compassionate. And shows you can't take it for granted. But yeah, so things like that, like I think culminated into just even living with more gratitude and really trying to enjoy and create things in life that are meaningful. You know, because when you're younger, it's like, the world's my oyster. We got all the time in the world.
Well, that's what I was going to just say. Do you feel like going through that experience with your brother and that experience of loss of him in his early 50s, mm-hmm. do you feel like that changed how you approached your life after? Do you feel like there was a switch in like, okay, I'm going to not wait for tomorrow as much?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, I would say that. It was weird though, because like my brother passed away, and then within the time of him being sick, my husband's mother got diagnosed with cancer, and unfortunately my brother died in 2017, then Mark's mother died in 2018, and then 3 months to the day his father died. So there was a lot of deaths. And a lot of loss happening in a close period of time.
It's crazy.
And I won't lie, it was dark. It was dark. Mm-hmm. And part of my coping mechanism was maybe drinking a little too much. But then you're a parent.
Yeah.
You know, so
yeah,
you got to figure this stuff out. You know, like.
Still got to get up every day.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, but. And you have to grieve. And I was mindful of like, okay, I have to grieve healthy.
Mm-hmm.
I have to try.
Yeah, but fuck, you've never grieved before. So how do you, what is grieving healthy even? What does that even mean?
I know, right?
Right?
It's like, that's the thing.
Yeah.
It's trial and error and trial and error. And then you try and find resources that can support you and things like that.
So what were those resources? Because this is it's really crazy. And this was not at all planned, but the theme outside than the, you know, the broader theme of Without Losing Your Cool is a lot of loss on this season. And like, and even people watching and listening and commenting, like there just seems so many people are suffering. So how did you grieve? Like for anybody listening who's in grieving right now, like my cousin's girlfriend, her sister died suddenly and without notice and young and never got to say goodbye. And like the impact of that, like, how
it's traumatizing
so what do you do?
Loss is trauma. It is like that's one thing I will say, and you can't underplay that. It's trauma to lose something that
so
you
what
love.
Did you do? How can you help anybody listening right now?
I cried, and then I bottled, like I got lost in getting things done, getting robotic. Things done. Yeah. Got very robotic and like a not lot of dealing. People. Yeah. And then I read books. I wish I could give you the names right now. There's yeah. some great books out there. I will say having a service does help because I went through some loss during COVID where you weren't able to have funerals and say goodbye.
Brutal.
And it was equally important for me to see people sad that my brother was gone as much as I was sad. Like it definitely sparks the healing in some ways, at least for me it did. Journaling. And then fortunately having a daughter that I love and a husband that I loved and friends that I loved.
But who was also going through his own grief and trauma.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's like you gather your loved ones and just try and be gentle. I kept being told Swiss nurse. Live your life like you have a Swiss nurse around you and be gentle. If you need to go to bed, you go to bed. If you need to tap out, not go to that party, don't go to that party. You know, you have to be gentle. I think being gentle with yourself and know it takes time. There's nothing else that will, there's no secret cure. There's just time. You learn how to live without them. That's, I think, the truth of it. You just, learn to live without them.
My aunt's going through that. Right now, her husband died in December, and he was like a dad to me, but you know, because he wasn't my dad, I miss him dearly, but he was all she had. Like they didn't have kids and stuff like that. So it's just, you can't really understand the impact of loss until it comes to you and lives in your home.
Yeah.
You know, and I guess the only thing is, is that person who has the loss, in your case, your brother, and Mark's case, his parents, it's like their life, they're different. Like you're always going to be different without your brother. Yeah. That's a part of you that will always be missing.
Yeah.
In a way.
It is. It absolutely is.
So
like when certain things happen, it's like, oh,
you would call.
Yeah. Or I'll hear a song and you know, you just can't help, but you know, and then sometimes you just cry out of the blue, even still.
Really?
Right. Like it'll just be like, not necessarily the devastating cry, but you'll weep. And it's like, as I like to think, I'm watering my heart. It's just because I loved him, right? Mm-hmm. I'm sad because I loved him.
Yeah.
And that is a gift to be able to say you've loved someone like that. Mm-hmm. I think it's a gift.
I agree.
You know, like even our fur babies, right?
I know.
They bring us so much joy in different ways and it's other ways they make us crazy, but you know,
but that's the same with the human experience. You know what I mean? Like you have your brother, you have your parents, you have people, you know, we're all here to teach each other things about being better, you know, whether having bigger heart, having more patience, giving more love, like whatever, you know, just like our dogs, our pets are here to teach, like every experience and interaction we have with another being is an opportunity to learn and grow.
Totally.
Well, I have to say that I love being your friend and you have inspired me so much about tenacity and just being unafraid and to just keep pushing forward. And I think it's incredible. And any way that I can champion you in getting your productions onto the screen, I will. Cause you know, I started a little production company, right?
I know. I love that.
I
would love to work with you.
I know. I would love to work with you.
I think we'd be dynamos.
I know.
You know? We are individually and then together, you know?
Yeah.
But I do believe loss is loss. And whether it's a parent, whether it's a pet, whether it's a friend, we don't know what that person was to someone. And so just people try to be kind.
I love that.
You know, just be kind. We're all doing our best.
Yeah.
We're all fighting our own inner demons and
battles. Yeah. And we're all overcoming something.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
If you're watching, be kinder than is necessary. I know that it's a cliche little saying that goes around, but
there's
true.
So much truth to it.
Yeah.
You know, just a simple
be gentle
thank
with
you.
Other people's hearts because you just don't know what they're dealing
going
with.
Through. And I don't know. I just find life's a little sweeter that way.
I agree.
Yeah. And I love you.
I love you.
And I'm so honored to be here doing this with you. And I'm, as I said, so proud and inspired by you all the time.
Thank you. I'm grateful for you every single day. So thanks for coming and hanging out with us and being vulnerable and talking about all the things that we said. We should talk about these things.
Totally.
Dry vaginas and
dry vaginas. Damn.
I love you.
I love you too, sweetheart. Thank you so much.
Thanks. I'm so grateful you joined in on this conversation. Subscribe where you're listening. Leave a comment. Connect with us on social media for more. And all the links, you can find them in the show notes. We will see you at the next one.